Good morning, you poor decrepit cows. Well, it's morning right now. I don't know when you'll be listening to this. Well, you know what? No, this is fine. This is quasi-indefatigable Zenilith. I'm Jay Nemro, and hey, we're gonna get back to Godsend here. And going through this whole thing. You have to take into account, you've got the convocation, we've talked about the convocation tons, some of the history of it, how it all works. Now we're going to kind of bring it to a head here. Well, Cindy, because of this book that she has, it's kind of a religious book, but then also it's kind of a history, and it's kind of a tutorial on the way the convocation works. No, she's not supposed to have, and she knows this kind of intuitively, and, so she's quiet, and she pretty much stays out of everything so that she doesn't get herself killed. Now, we'll talk about Davor for a minute. Davor is a pretty typical young man of the Convocation. He knows his place. He's basically a slave. Whatever lady he's assigned to wants him to do, that's what he does. Now, he's kind of a scoffer. He doesn't get into the games that a lot of guys get into, where they fight and jostle to get a lady's favor so that they can rise in status. Because that's the only way a man can rise in status, if a woman gives you that status. That's just an accepted part of life, you know. You don't really have a choice over what lady you get to go with, but you do have a choice quite a bit as to how well you please her so that you can get certain perks for it. So, this means that, Davor's not a very in-demand person. He's pretty much low-level. He's a young man. He's probably 19, 20, maybe 21. And he's kind of a drifter. And, he is attached to this woman who her major income comes from fishing. So he is kind of a fisherman's apprentice, for lack of a better term for it. And he's pretty worthless. He's attached to this old fisherman. He's kept around because he's a good fisherman. And Davor kind of helps him out. This old fisherman just kind of puts up with Davor. In the opening scene, just before something happens to Davor, is this whole thing to know kind of what his status is. That he's just kind of this kid who has nothing going, and he's not going anywhere. He does have these dreams. I think we're going to keep that in. I've had that for a long time, and I was contemplating just taking it out and having something just miraculous happen to him later in life. So I think it needs to be that he has these things. He's almost got kind of a gift for it. He's got these dreams. And he sees things. He sees a lot of things. Some things he sees before they happen. He usually sees things as they happen. He can see things that are going on far away. He can't really control these things, honestly. They just kind of come to him when, his mind is wandering. And maybe he likes his dreams. He, it's kind of like watching a movie, I guess. He likes the movie better than he likes his life. So he tends to daydream a lot to kind of encourage these dreams to come. And that's problematic. It's problematic at best. Anyway, so he's out there and he sees in vision somebody coming to his lady. And he's concerned. He gets to see that it has something to do with him, which is odd because, you know, he's nothing to be concerned about. He's not even an important person. Or at least he doesn't think so. We find out later about Davos. He's an interesting, very vital commodity. He is what's called there's this circumstance that happens. These ladies really do want a world where ladies only have girls. Not true yet, and they set up a system to kind of make it look that way, to kind of fake everybody out. And it's where they suck all these babies in to kind of this nursery setting, and then they dole them back out again. And everybody's given the impression that this is just something for taking care, taking some prenatal care of these babies. And it really isn't. It has nothing to do with that. All has to do with the sorting process. Trying to make sure the most exceptional baby girls get put in proper families. And, you know, it's just a big sorting mechanism. Well, it's been known for a long time that Davor is something special. Not precisely in any sense besides of his genetics. His father, although that term is kind of silly, except in a purely genetic sense, he doesn't know who his father is. He never would know. There is no concept, really, of mother and father. Especially among the common classes, there is a concept of mother in the among the ladies, but it's not a biological thing at all. It's just whose family you grow up in. Anyway, Davor's father has the distinction of having given birth to all daughters, a whole string of daughters, except for one, who is the male. Last child, and that was Davor. And, you know, the convocation, in a way, kind of clings to some weird superstitions, and this is one of them. You know, that those guys know that there's certain combinations that work. I don't know how they know genetically that men kind of control the selection of whether a baby is a girl or a boy, but I guess they seem to know this. And it's convenient because we know that in our culture, and I'm just going to leave it there. You know, I'm not going to ever explain how I can do that, because I'm not really sure how they would. They don't have much technology. Anyway, so Davor is... Well, actually, this is... So Davor is this blessed kid, because it stopped it because his father was so prolific with girls, and then all of a sudden Davor popped out, that Davor would be the same way. And so he's very valued as kind of a stud, you know? And this is what he's going to do. Of course, he has no knowledge of this. It's all been kept. The convocation's kept tabs on him. The higher matrons sent him off to this certain place to grow up. It doesn't really matter. It was a really kind of a low-level lady. It didn't really matter how he was treated or anything like that, because they just want his genetics. They have no interest in him being anything besides that. Well, he's being snatched. He's being grabbed from this group. It's not hard. It happens all the time. Everybody's used to it. It's not weird. He just knows he's being carted off. What he doesn't know is he's being carted off to become somebody's first consort, which is really kind of a high-level thing, especially for a measly, lazy sort of person that he really kind of is. Well, some drop of the genetic thing, I think it has to do with the fact that Melisandre's quiet and somewhat introverted. She seems to have all the aptitude to do something greater. It isn't that she doesn't have it, she just doesn't use it. But they're going to match her up with this lazy, indolent stud. And they're hoping that what comes out of this is a whole bunch of girls. A whole bunch of girls that have some of Melisandre's attributes. She's very beautiful. She's got poise. She's really good that way. In a way, she's kind of a blessed child, except for this introvert that she has. That's okay, because it makes it so that she's a perfect breeder. They think that she's going to really be excellent. When she rises up in the convocation, she wouldn't be a breeder. She'd be doing something else that makes better use of her abilities. She's perfect for a new breeder, and she's always been kind of put that way because, she's not progressing anyway. So they're going to put these two kiddos together, even though they're not kids. She's getting ready to turn 16, and he's nearly 20. They're putting these two kids together so that she can produce more things. Melisandre knows this. You know, the things she's learned in this book help her know that this is exactly what they plan on doing. And this is kind of course, she can into it very well, too. Of course, she doesn't want this to happen. She doesn't want to be a slave to the convocation. She hasn't had to worry about it up until now because she's not part of the convocation. She's being groomed to become such. Of course, a lower level one. There's not much grooming that needs to be done. She's basically fed, allowed to live, and stuff like that. And she goes through the basic training that the convocation does to all young people, just to kind of keep them down. And, she's going to fight back. Now, she knows about God, and she prays. She does all the things that a normal, godly person would do. And, she's in some thing because she's getting ready to be, you could say married off, but it's not a marriage. She's getting ready to be sucked into the convocation. Make it much more difficult for her to do anything. She's going to get a matron, yada, 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 all the normal stuff that happens to these guys. So, sorry, I'm trying to readjust something here. But I'm trying to get over sickness. I've been sick for 4 or 5 days. Melisandre's, she's already planning her escape. She doesn't really know what she's going to do. There's a place where she can go. The book talks about the place where the people of God went. They were called to go there, at least some of the people of God, a place called Wakey, way up in the mountains, and they were charged with keeping out invaders from this beautiful, blessed little land. And it really is kind of an anomaly, this land. There's this huge, very tall mountain range that kind of cuts off this land from everything else around on the west, totally bordered by sea. On the south, there's this huge, just desert, blowing sand desert. It's just horrible. The north is very cold. This is actually way up northern latitude place. So north of this land, it gets very, very cold and stormy, and that's also a sea up there too. And on the east side is this mountain range. There's only one pass anybody knows about over this mountain range. And it's really true, there only really is one pass. This thing's like a rock wall. And the land's further to the east. And this, these people that have been sent to Waikiki, they're called the Kiami, because that was the name of the son of a lady who remained faithful to the faith. His name was Kiami. He wasn't married to Sarah Dio, who was the first queen. He was her brother-in-law. His brother as well. Because that's the way it is with these kind of situations. When you have a couple that populate an entire nation, you're going to have brothers and sisters getting married. So he's Sarah Dio's brother. And they're very close. She's righteous too. But her children are corrupted. He is ordered by God to take this, his followers, his group of people, his children and other people that will follow him. And they go up to Waikiki and they become the guardians of this land. And, you know, over time they just lost contact because they didn't really have any trade back and forth between them. The descendants of Kiami, who just take on his name, call himself Kiami. They have nothing in common with the people down the plains, down the island. You know, they live all a different life. The people down on the island were getting pretty disgusting. This whole women kind of taking over thing. So they didn't have any relations. Very little. So Melisenda's read about this place. She doesn't even know if it really exists. But she has faith and takes word for it, and that's kind of her plan. She's going to escape, and she's going to go to Waikiki. She's somewhat worried, you know. There's a whole lot of training about in use. You know, and even if you read the book, even if you have a lot of faith, you're still going to believe or at least give some credence to the ideas you taught as a child. And the biggest one is you really can't survive out there. Every place outside this island that's protected and where there's a lot of people is just full of wild, crazy animals and crazy people, evil men, evil women. That you know, and they cooked up stories like that they eat other people, they're cannibals, and those kind of things to try to convince people that they don't want to have anything to do with those people. So you've got all this stuff to fight through. So she's a little concerned. She really doesn't want to do this herself, but she doesn't want to be sucked into the complications and begin to live that kind of a life. She doesn't want to do that. She's afraid that if she does, she'll just succumb to it. And she'll never be able to break away. So she's kind of wanting to find out about this consort. She's hoping and she's praying that this consort will be somebody that can help her. Which is really odd. You wouldn't say, you know, she's always been taught that men are just beasts of burden and that you can control them really easy. She's kind of hoping she'll get a guy that she can control and that she can just drag him off and he'll protect her while she goes off to Waykeep. Well, so she's already started preparing. She's got these secret little hiding places. And she's already got clothing and food stuff, things like that. She's pretty much getting ready to go because it's only a few months before she's going to turn 16, when she's going to be integrated and she's going to become a lady. And she's going to get all this stuff. But now, the next couple of days, the biggest concern is that everybody's excited about it, is that she's going to receive her first consort. Typically, when a girl becomes a lady, she's already pregnant. Every lady is expected to have at least one or two children. That's just the way it is. Now, I usually take care of that when you're quite young, usually before you're 20. You've got an heir, you know. So that time between 16 and maybe 18 or 19 is the time to get yourself an heir. You need to have a daughter, because that kind of stabilizes you, and it certainly keeps you in the convocation. You're not going to be taking off and running with this little girl. That, you know, the convocation kind of keeps them sort of hostage. It's not that it's anything overt. It's not they really have to worry about too much. And every now and then, if you get kind of a person who wants to buck the system, they kind of use, and that's the whole story of the convocation, is that you're used. Every single good thing you have about you gets used by the convocation to control you. They use this little kid, this little girl, whom I'm sorry, every woman's going to be attached to. They use this little girl to control you. You know, you're allowed to breastfeed her. That's why it's important that when the midwife comes, if it appears to be a healthy girl, don't go ahead and let the mom keep breastfeeding. So that we can have this connection, because that connection helps keep these women in line. You know, your matron kind of takes management over this girl. She's, after you breastfed and after the sex start, you know, you'll have 4, 6, 8 weeks of breastfeeding, and then that girl, kind of depending on what the matron thinks, will be shuffled off to the nursery. And you'll get reports now, but you know your matron tries to keep, and it kind of keeps you as a new lady kind of moping. And that's good. The convocation gives you something to do. Tell you to spend some more time with your consort, which is a gift from the convocation. It doesn't belong to you really. You kind of get that impression that maybe they belong to you, but they really don't. Because the convocation can choose to shuffle around as they want to, and that's another way they kind of hold you, is they always keep you in a constant state of turmoil until they feel like you've really clutched on to the whole convocation, the person that should make you feel the most comfortable and happy, and for which you should show the most gratitude is to your matron. And your matron becomes your mother, for lack of a better term, or your older sister, or anything else, your confidant, the person that she'll tell anything to. And that's what keeps the whole system going, is a lady's almost, you know, pointless desire to do everything her matron says because it's her best friend. They cultivate this whole thing. Oh, I've already got over. Gosh dang it. Okay.